Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host today, Cynthia McClure. Our first interview is from guest journalist Loris Olson. She previews the Theologians in Residence program that will be happening on February 28th at the Ames United Church of Christ. This program started in 1984. Over the years, most of the theologians have been specialized in the word of religion. This year, there are experts in music giving workshops on music. Then, Greta Anderson shares a story of how homelessness can happen when least expected, and the cost of being the working poor for one Central Iowa family. And finally, our KHOI intern, Jasmine Margia, covered the NCORE iScore program at ISU. She has brought in two guests today to discuss the upcoming event that will be happening March 6th. Now, here is that interview with guest journalist Loris Olson, who previewed the Theologians in Residence program that will be happening February 28th at the Ames United Church of Christ.
Gospel and hymns. Music and spirit-filled worship will be explored this weekend by two visiting theologians at the Ames United Church of Christ. The theme this year is spirit-filled worship, and guest theologians Dr. Ruth Duck and Dr. Cynthia Wilson will do more than talk about spirit. They plan on leading the workshop participants in rousing song. Cynthia Wilson is Assistant Vice President of Student Life and Dean of Students. Ruth Duck is a professor of worship. Dr. Wilson and Dr. Duck are colleagues at Garrett Evangelical Seminary in Evanston, Illinois. Both women's work focuses on music and worship. Dr. Duck studies and writes liturgical texts and hymns. Dr. Wilson researches and performs gospels and spirituals grounded in the history of black churches in America. I spoke with both women via telephone last week.
We begin with Dr. Wilson.
Why do so many religions incorporate music into their worship rites?
The definition of worship is the work of the people. And so one of the most effective ways of facilitating the work of the people is through song. One of the things that people can do in a corporate setting, particularly in corporate worship together, is sing. Oftentimes, those texts help people embody the theology embraced by a particular faith community.
Wilson has sung at Carnegie Hall, performed gospel in concert in Copenhagen, Denmark, and been nominated for a Grammy for her 1993 album, New Songs of Zion.
Music really does serve to help a human being center, to sort of exhale.
You are noted for gospel. Are the terms gospel and spiritual synonymous?
Yes. When you talk about gospel music, you're talking about music that shares the good news of Jesus Christ.
What is the history of gospel music?
It springs up from the root of American music, recognizing that American music begins with the slave song, the song of the slave. Because everything else that was being sung here on this soil before that time was imported from other places. The hymns came from other places, but the spiritual was actually born on American soil. So when we think of American music, that would be the root. So out of that root springs other genres like the blues, like jazz. Blues and gospel kind of live together. Because the blues, like gospel music, tells the authentic story, the life story of the people, of the community. It's honest about what is actually going on. And so when this commentary is offered in the blues, the difference between blues and gospel is that the blues never really gets to a solution. It just serves up what is going on and what's going wrong. With gospel music, you end up with the end of the story, which is that Christ came that we might all have life and have it more abundantly.
We know that new blues music is being written. Is there new gospel music being written?
Oh, absolutely. Daily. Even that genre is beginning to morph into other kinds of styles of gospel music. It's important to note that in the black church tradition or in black life, the sacred and the secular always live together. There is no dichotomy between the two. And so Saturday night becomes the beginning for Sunday morning. Sunday morning becomes the continuation of Saturday night. The composers that are now bringing to bear a different light because of this new hip generation, they're giving a new spin, sometimes even a new message. We have now what we call neo-soul, urban soul, and all of these genres. And in them, you can also find the message of the good news of the gospel.
You are known for your vocals. You were nominated for a Grammy in 1993 for an album called New Songs of Zion.
Preceding the CD project was a supplement to the United Methodist hymnal called Songs of Zion. And that project is essentially a compilation of a tradition that has been historically an oral tradition. So we were able to capture these many spirituals, and in some cases, some of the hymns and the gospel hymns. We were able to actually capture them on a page that had not been done.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Reverend Dr. Cynthia Wilson. Dr. Wilson's website covering her work is yourfreeindeed.com. That is yourfreeindeed.com.
Dr. Ruth Duck is also presenting at the upcoming workshop, Theologians in Residence.
She has written an estimated 200 hymns and published 3 single-author collections of her texts. In 2013, she was named a Fellow of the Hymn Society for her contributions to congregational song. You've chosen to focus on hymns. Why?
When I was in seminary, I discovered a lot of obstacles when I was ready to graduate, obstacles to finding placement in a church. And I realized the depth of sexism in the church in 1974. So I wanted to do something about it, and I got into a group that was collecting hymns, edited or selected to mostly use no gender language at all, but certainly not to have the predominant use of male language for God and for humans that you would find in most hymns at that time. And so that was the beginning of it, and I found I enjoyed it, and in time I felt it's a part of my call to ministry.
You write words, or text as it is called, but I understand that occasionally you also write the music?
Yes, I have. I always write a text, almost always write a text with some music in mind. It might be a song that's already there, it might be a song that a composer's given me, or it might be a song I hear in my head. Most of those I don't publish, but they give me a sense of the shape of the tune, because that's how I work on the rhythm.
When someone thinks about a hymn, they typically think about music traditionally written prior to our generation. Can you give me a little background about the music in hymns?
I think there's a great variety of music in hymns. We can have very classically oriented hymns. We can have short corritos. Hispanic people or Latina people will use. It's a short repeated chorus. Or we can have a jazz. At the moment, I'm in process of working on a text to an old tune that a friend has done a jazz setting for that I'm fitting the words to his tune. So we can use almost any style of music. It depends on what the congregation prefers. When we teach it at our school, we call it congregational song, because hymn is sort of identified with strophic hymns that are more words, more developed thought, but we're interested in including a range of music that our students would be interested in.
Has there been an increase in the number of new songs that are being written for worship?
Oh, it's just, it's actually quite phenomenal, because they're all those styles I mentioned and more. Are people are writing many, many hymns now. The contemporary movement alone is hundreds of thousands of hymns. For instance, the New Presbyterian Hymnal, it has some old hymns, but 500 hymns in the book, and a lot of them are newer. And there's an organization called the Hymn Society in the United States of Canada, and about, 200 or 300 people gather every year, and not all of us are hymn writers, but many of us are, and so many, many people are writing hymns in different styles. Different music will fit better with different songs.
Thank you, Dr. Duck. You can find more about Dr. Duck's work at ruthduckhymnist, all words spelled out, .net. We've been speaking to Dr. Cynthia Wilson and Dr. Ruth Duck about their upcoming presentation at the 2015 Theologians in Residence at Ames United Church of Christ. The church is located at 217 6th Street in Ames. This year's program is from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday, February 28th, and from 9:30 a.m. to noon on Sunday, March 1st. Registration is required. Call 515-232-9323 or visit amesucc.org, that is amesucc.org, to register.
We end this segment with Cynthia Wilson singing Draw Me Nearer from Simply Cynthia, the best of Cynthia Wilson.
You just heard Laura Solson talking with Dr. Cynthia Martin, and the song she played was Draw Me Nearer. Dr. Martin is one of two theologians that will offer workshops on music in worship at the Ames United Church of Christ on February 28th. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. KHOI correspondent Greta Anderson shares a story about homelessness in Central Iowa.
Hi, Cynthia.
Hi.
Well, in November of last year, the National Center on Family Homelessness came out with a report, America's Youngest Outcasts. It estimated that there are nearly 2.5 million homeless children in America. This report also ranked the states in terms of how they are addressing child homelessness. While Iowa's overall score was pretty good, the prevalence of child homelessness in Iowa was 35th among the states. We want to get that down to 50th, suggesting that there is room for improvement. On March 11th, the number of homeless children in Iowa, in Story County, in Ames, in fact, will increase by one. On Friday, I spoke with a woman who is scheduled to have a C-section on that day. She is now homeless. This Thursday will mark her last day in the Ames Motor Lodge, the hotel on East Lincoln Way, where Emergency Residence Project houses families on an emergency basis. Vic Moss, the shelter's director, has already made an extra allowance and let her family stay 1 week longer than the shelter's guidelines generally allow. This woman has a husband, two kids in Nevada schools, and a year of bad breaks behind her. She grew up in Ames. Her husband grew up in Nevada. Here she is telling her story.
We had been paying $900 in utilities first, so we were going to sell our residence anyway. It was a trailer, and we sold it. And then we had a great business opportunity. We were moving over by Wisconsin, and the people that were moving there with us, all of a sudden, right around the beginning of December, after Thanksgiving, shortly before Christmas, pretty much let us know that that business loan did not go through. They were not moving. After we'd already moved all our stuff, they were going to pay to move us. We were going to have a four-bedroom house, everything else. So he was working part-time jobs, and I'd already switched the doctors up to Wisconsin for the baby, because our OB down here was leaving in January 1st anyways to move. So we went through a month of trying to find a different doctor here, and then we've been renting like a room and a half out of someone else's house that I woke up the other day is the reason I called Vic, and their electricity was going to be turned off, you know. And so I called him, and then we've been looking ever since. I mean, I had even before had backed up plan before we were going to move to Wisconsin. We had started doing through Surha, other places, looked for apartments, other places, because we were selling our place, and there was just nothing open. And then Surha, I've called, and it's over stuff that's not even has to do with us.
Surha is the Section 8 housing?
Yes.
It's Central Iowa Regional Housing. It's not Section 8, per se, but Section 8 is part of it. They screwed up on my first application, so we sent in another one. Second one, I mean, when they did the background check, we'd already gone through 4 months, gone to Grimes, done all the meetings, been approved, like, they'd done our background check 3 different times.
Yeah.
We provided all the information. I mean,
my last name spelled wrong.
And they're denying it for a dismissed charge or something that he is not even in his name, but, and she sat there and listened to this lady tell me,
dismissed.
You can appeal it, but I'm going to deny it for it. And I said, and then you're going to deny me for this other one that's not in his name, that's a dismissed charge, it's not even him.
Yeah.
She said, yep. That was for the Surha Public Housing, which are the actual housing places, like, not where you get a voucher where you can move to wherever you want. So then I call back to find out how our voucher program, because it's a separate program, even though you fill out both applications, which I had done twice by this point, and now they're telling me I have to fill out another application because they canceled it when they went through with all the stuff that we did with the other one. Even though they have every piece of the same information, they have to send them all the same exact stuff, including down to, I had marriage license, birth certificates, everything, background, everything. We haven't asked for any help from anybody really other than rides. I mean, because we didn't have a license. We're waiting to reinstate my license. And I don't have the $400 now to reinstate. We have a car, but I can't reinstate it without the $400 to do that. Because you have to have the $400 reinstatement fee paid and the insurance and the $100 payment. And then I can register the car. But I'm not going to drive without a license. The charge that I lost my license for, I had a really crap. I mean, it sounds really stupid. It sounds like I'm making this up, but I'm really not. I mean, I lost my license over a charge that an OWI that I blew zeros and passed every sobriety test. I mean, and it was just a wreck. And I've been fighting it because I don't have the money. The public defender kept telling me they were filing papers. They weren't. He just kept continuing it. By the time we got to the day before the trial, when we had to go in and do the last thing that I thought we were doing, so that he'd been filed all these other papers that he said, well, no. He said, this is your offer. And so then I had to pay for treatment for an OWI that I blew zeros, and I passed those sobriety tests. I've had to pay for another class that they made me take. For some reason. And, yeah. And I still can't even get my license because I have to pay this other $400.
Well, that's a lot to sort through, but I'll provide a recap here. This person described the runaround that she had at Surha, the agency that Ames switched to when it decided to dissolve its own Section 8 housing program, which was run by Vanessa Baker Latimer. Then, unfortunately, she and her husband misplaced their trust in a friend who said he had a business opportunity in Wisconsin. At the same time, she had an accident with her truck when the steering rod broke causing a crash in a residential street in Ames, and was charged with OWI despite passing sobriety tests. She then describes being allegedly misrepresented by her public defender, who filed no papers on her behalf and urged her to plead guilty at the last minute. This resulted in fines and a loss of her driver's license. So the $400 reinstatement fee she was talking about was a fee that the DOT assesses just so the person can begin making payments on her fines. And finally, if you'll remember, she started her story with the fact that she had been paying $900 in utilities for her trailer at Home Acres Mobile Park, Mobile Home Park on 10th Street in Nevada. I asked her about this.
We have a great landlord and a great city over there in Nevada that the water department, we paid $300 and some a month for water, and they kept telling us we had to pay it because he wouldn't fix anything on whatever pipe. And it's been estimated there was like 7 other people that have made complaints with the city. Our last 1 month bill for water, and we went up there and complained. They were supposed to move our meter. It took 2 years to fight with them on that before we finally sold it. We were gone for 3 weeks, and our bill went up to like $200 for a month, and nobody was there. And, I mean, it never went back down. And there was no leaks under the trailer. We had a plumber electrician come in, checked on the plumbing, and there was nothing.
And you are going to have a C-section, right?
Mm-hmm. So I can't go into labor. I'd been in the hospital, like, once a week with all the stress. And we scheduled the C-section and everything. And
that's scheduled for first week of March?
Second week of March, I think.
How are the kids holding up?
My kids are doing pretty well. They just, I mean, my kids are pretty strong-willed. I mean, we've never been materialist. Like, they're not the kind of kids that expect any, like, they get what they need, everything. They have where we're staying, they have, you know, before we, you know, they had clothes on their back, food, everything they needed. But they're not spoiled by any means. But they also understand the value of money and they understand the value of bills. And, I mean, my son, he was in wrestling. You know, my daughter, we got her through a grant into the drama program. So, I mean, it's not like they aren't involved, and they do great in school. They have straight A's. They're above all their levels and their grades. No real problems in school or anything. They were excited about the baby. My son's overly excited, and he was really excited. They were so excited. We were moving up to by Wisconsin. And, I mean, they were so excited. And then that fell through. And I don't know. Right now, they're just anywhere would be okay. But, I mean, we're a very close family. Like, I mean, my main two goals right now, and I can't figure out. I need to have my license and just a place. I don't even care if it's a one. I mean, even if we found a one better, just a place that we could go home to. Because if he had a license, we can get him anywhere to work in a place that we can just go home to stay, you know? They're not worried about if the other people living there are going to pay their bills. I can't catch a break. I keep doing everything and it's not like I'm spending money anywhere else and doing anything else. It's not like we don't have cable, we don't have any of that, we don't even watch TV. I mean, we took bike rides with the kids. I mean, we don't spend money on anything. So it's not like...
I think you've told your story.
Thank you.
That's a powerful story.
Yes, Cynthia. And with us, we have someone who lived through much of those events with her, Jody Heron of Nevada Schools. Jody is the student and family development specialist at Nevada Schools, and she accompanied my interview on several of these meetings. Jody Heron, are the systems that people in poverty encounter really this bad?
Yeah, I think that they're really hard to maneuver. That's what I've found in working with a lot of families. My role at the school allows me to take families to resources, give them referrals, and help them in any ways that I can. And mainly, I work with families that are in poverty. And what I find is it's a very tricky system to even find out where you need to go to be able to get help, and then how to get there. And there's a lot of barriers that I think stand in the way of people. For example, you know, there was mention of the Serhat agency. That agency is actually located in Grimes. Many years ago, when as I was working with families, they would come for appointments to local areas. Now families have to go to them. You can see that that would be a huge barrier if you don't have a vehicle, or if you have no money to begin with, or you're homeless. And I think it becomes kind of a cyclical situation where there's one thing after another that happens to families. I think of my own situation. Recently, we had a washing machine that broke. We had a car that, you know, got hit and a flat tire. Immediately, I had friends that were helping me. I had family that was helping me. We had an extra car that was over at our house within 5 minutes. That doesn't happen for families that don't have connections with and support groups. And oftentimes, I think that is one of the barriers that families in poverty face.
Right. But we also heard some the system, people who are charged with helping these folks being so, in some cases, incompetent. They failed, or they messed up the application. They destroyed the information that she needed to reapply. Or this lawyer who allegedly did nothing, sitting on his hands while she was trying to prove her innocence in this case of the car that ran amok on a residential street.
Right. And I think, as with any system or any type of thing, there's good and bad. What I hear a lot of families telling me is oftentimes there will be a situation where, say, an agency lost their paperwork or didn't, file something right. And there's a lot of proof as to the families telling me the truth. Oftentimes, it continues to be their fault. And they're the ones that are the ones that lose out. They either don't receive their funding, they're, not put on a waiting list, they don't get the help that they need. It's extremely stressful, and they're already in a lot of crisis. And I see that time and time again. And there isn't anyone that's able to advocate for them or continue that process. Especially, you think of a legal system. If that was one of us, we would hire, an attorney that was competent. We would the utility situation, we would be fighting something like that to make sure that it was right. If you don't have the money to do that, you're stuck in a situation where you depend on whoever is provided to help you.
Right. And in the case of the utilities, the city might have stepped in and said, something's wrong here. We see these ridiculously high bills across the board for people in a trailer park. There must be a broken pipe somewhere. We should not be charging these people that amount. We should be making sure that the trailer park owner gets his pipes fixed.
Right. And I'm not sure, what happened in that situation, but I saw the bills, and I know that there were huge issues and probably more than one family that was affected with that.
So the one place in town, it seems, that they don't get treated that way, or one of the places is the shelter, Emergency Residence Project. Vic was able to kind of bend the rules and allow this family to stay an extra week at the Ames Motor Lodge. Now, I know from being actually on the board of ERP, so I guess that's a disclaimer here, that we don't have many spaces at the Ames Motor Lodge anymore. We used to house homeless families quite extensively there, but now we have only two spots, and that's because all of the other spots at the Ames Motor Lodge are being taken by the workers at the ethanol plant. There's just such a high demand for that kind of housing, for low-income rental or temporary housing like that, the owner won't let us have more than two slots. And beyond that, the cost of those hotel spaces has doubled in the past couple years because of this high demand. And across the board, you see, I think, rental prices everywhere going way up because we have these various forces, supply and demand, just making it a boon market for the real estate people. You have a hugely expanding Iowa State, and you have this very high-intensity workforce there at the Ames, at the Nevada ethanol plant.
Right, and that's been a huge struggle in finding housing for families that I work with. In fact, I'm ending up having to look clear in towns that are much further away. There just isn't anything that is available, and especially that's affordable for low-income families, which is, you know, a shame in terms of, I always think about the kids in the situation and what's best for them, and staying within their same district that they've known people for a long time.
And they're getting A's in.
They're doing good. Yeah. They're great kids.
So Since I interviewed her, I understand that an anonymous donor came up and paid that $400 that she needed to reinstate the her opportunity to pay her OWI fine. But she's still looking then for a place where she can go on Thursday because that's when her time runs out at the Ames Motor Lodge.
Definitely. I mean, I think that's first and foremost. She has a vehicle, which I think will be great in terms of being able to get to work. And that was donated to the school, which is way awesome. And as you can tell, you know, when you're talking about the donated funds, there are great people that are around that want to help. And that warms my heart always in doing this work, knowing that there are people that are out there like that.
So tell me about this car. This was, do you have a program at Nevada Schools where people can donate cars?
Well, I have within the school district, it's called the Student Assistance Fund, and it's just donated monies that come that I can help families with rent or housing, utilities, whatever they need. And one of the biggest barriers that we find is transportation, especially being in Nevada. So within that time, we've had about four cars that have been donated, and now there's the Wheels to Work program that has started within Story County that I'm super excited about. So if people have vehicles, they can donate those cars, and they get them ready for families, and then we're able to give them to families that need them.
The
Wheels
agency?
To Work.
Yeah.
Wheels to Work is through MICA, Salvation Army, and Story County Community Services.
Okay. Well, I guess we have to close up pretty quickly here. Some people out there might want to help this family find housing or, I don't know. I mean, that's what it's down to right now.
It is. That would be great.
And do you have a recommendation for how that should go?
Or I think Vic Moss, through Emergency Residence Project, I call Vic a saint myself. He's a wonderful man, cares deeply about his work. So that would probably be the place that I would start.
Okay. So folks who might know of a place that would be available or could put the family up for a month or so, just while they get their bearings and he can start going to work, the husband, now that they have a car, that would be the place to go. Vic Moss at Emergency Residence Project. Well, Jody Heron from Nevada Schools, I really admire the work you do. in the community. It sounds like very vital stuff that you're helping these families with, and just to have a witness to the struggles that they go through, I'm sure is very important for them.
Thank you.
So great to me now, to thyself this Lord, by the power.
Just heard Dr. Cynthia Martin playing the song Draw Me Nearer, and she will be at the Theologians Residence Program that's happening February 28th at the Ames United Church of Christ. For those who are interested in helping the homeless, Vic Moss at Ames Emergency Residence Project would be an excellent person to contact to help them. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. KHOI's intern, Jasmine Margia, covered NCORE-ICORE program at ISU. She has brought in two guests today to discuss the upcoming event.
Hello. Today I will be speaking with Japana Kellogg. He is the Director of Student Services Support Program at Iowa State, and he's also been involved with the National Conference on Race and Ethnicity. And also sitting here with us today is Daquan Burnside. He's an Iowa State sophomore. He attended the National Conference on Race and Ethnicity this past May and is going to present at this year's ISCOR on March 6th. So NCORE, or the National Conference on Race and Ethnicity, and then ISCOR is the Iowa State Conference on Race and Ethnicity. And so you'll just be hearing me use NCORE and ISCOR throughout the interview today. So welcome, Japan and Daquan.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to be here this morning.
Okay, so we'll start off with Japana. So you've been working at Iowa State for 15 years, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so what have you been doing at Iowa State? Just tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, well, I first started as an academic advisor and a multicultural liaison officer in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, and I currently work as the director of Student Support Services, which is a federally funded program, a TRIO program, providing academic support for first-generation low-income college students, and then I also provide leadership to the NCORE-ICORE project.
Okay, so how did you get intrigued by NCORE and ICORE?
Well, oddly enough, my first NCORE was I was at a different institution, and I had no idea anything about Iowa or anything about Iowa State. And I worked, my previous institution was in Minnesota. So I think that was the first year that Iowa State took a group of students to the conference. And I kept meeting pockets of students from Iowa State, and I was impressed.
And what year was this?
This was in 1999.
Okay. Cool. So since being with Iowa State, how has that NCORE experience been?
It's been an evolution. I can see where we first started, where the attendance for the ICORE conference was, I would say, 139 participants. And at this point in time, we're well over 660, 670 consistently. And I think we've had as many as 800, considering it's a conference just for Iowa State participants or people that work there.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit more with your experience with NCORE and then bringing, you know, such a big group to these national conferences?
Okay. Well, it starts out with a vision from our vice president, Thomas Hill. He talks about when he first came to Iowa State and seeing that there's a need to expand, he understood, you know, where we're housed in Iowa. And a lot of times when we come to the conference, we have a more diverse group than some of the other universities. So it starts with the support of student affairs for the success over the years.
Okay. And then I know Iowa State does get recognized. So could you tell us a little bit how that feels, I guess, being recognized at such a national conference?
It feels really good. Probably the most important part is watching the individuals that travel for the first time and watching how they are welcomed at the national conference because of the work and the impression that other students have made at the conference.
So on the iScore webpage, it says, iScore 2015 is a celebration of our diverse community and supports the Iowa State mission to create, share, and apply knowledge to make Iowa and a world a better place. So what does this mean, a better place?
I think each person has the ability within themselves to do what they can. And I want to say that what I've witnessed with the students over the years, it helps you be more in tune, more equipped, more understanding to further those conversations. I think Iowa State is a place that there's some work to be done. But what I've seen with this particular project, I've seen the students find reward in the efforts and the energy that they put into it. And it starts with Iowa State. It starts with the students. I would tell people on a consistent basis that I've been asked about students and leadership, and I said the students we take, they are leaders, but hopefully this project and this experience has impacted how they lead.
And you mentioned that these students have conversations. So what type of conversations do students and faculty and staff have at NCORE or ISCORE?
We could talk a little bit about like the current events in regard to hands up and things like that. I think our students feel comfortable having those conversations to a better outcome. So we've had conversations that have come up based on any political issue that revolves around race. And so when we have faculty, staff, and students having these conversations, that's three levels of interpretation and understanding, and it's in a safe environment under education. So I think even if you don't agree, you leave the room or you leave the conference with a different perspective, and I think that mirrors the national conference. Our students sit in a circle and talk about their day. They talk about the information they've gathered, and for the first time maybe have heard, they come back to Iowa State. They take a class for the whole semester, and they continue their research. So the unique piece about this particular project is we ask our students to research an ethnicity other than their own. And most of the time, students will say they've learned so much about themselves by starting with someone else.
Okay, interesting. And so let's just talk about yourself. Like, is there something that you learn each year that's different from the past year? Do you have, like, any aha moments during the conference?
I do, and it's typically through the students. Okay. I think the conversations that happen as the students process their day are always rewarding. Some of the research, some of the sessions that I've attended, you know, some of the same sessions, and it's a different twist, but I look forward to the evening time where it's like a book club. You may have read that passage or you may have read that particular chapter, but it's not until you have conversation about it that you have a true meaning or understanding.
Okay. So is there anything you would like to say to those students or just anyone in Ames who may be hesitant to start a conversation on race and diversity issues?
I would say it's better to have that conversation than to be put in a situation where you're uncomfortable or you can't move forward. And I think that's what people don't realize is we're in a diverse society. And it's easy not to say anything and just move past it, those awkward moments. But I'm pretty proud of our students that really step into those situations and have the skills to facilitate a conversation. And it's just a conversation. Sometimes action is not needed, but the conversation is necessary. And I think that goes a long way if you're either representative of a different social group, or if you're trying to advocate for, you need to have the tools and the skills in order to facilitate those conversations.
Okay. Well, everyone is welcome to attend the ISCOR, Iowa State Conference on Race Ethnicity. There are no tickets needed, correct?
No tickets needed.
Okay. So for more information, you can visit iscor.iastate.edu. That's iscor.iastate.edu. And as Japana has mentioned, the students involved in the 2014 NCORE cohort, they will be presenting their research they have done over specific race. And Daquan Burside is one of the students who was involved in the NCORE program, and he's here with us today. So Daquan, can you tell us just a little bit more about what that experience was like for you and maybe other students?
I guess initially, being a freshman student, at the end of my freshman year, I hadn't really been exposed to diversity and the number of topics that we discuss at NCORE and ISCORE. And I think going to Indianapolis in May was really key in my personal development. And I think it was obviously key for a lot of people that attended the conference. We really got a lot out of going there and seeing and learning about different people other than ourselves. And I think more than anything, being able to expose ourselves to people different from us, understanding other people and being able to interact with people different was really important to not only Iowa State being able to bring that knowledge and exposure back here, but just learning about it personally was really, really effective for me.
Was there maybe a specific moment that you can recall and that just like really sticks out that you learned something from?
I would say, for me, I actually had interviewed for a CA position the year before, and I think I learned that I really hadn't exposed myself to people different from myself, especially in terms of sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. And I think there at the conference, I was able to expose myself and really get to know people different from myself, being from a Christian background. There are a lot of topics that we simply just don't discuss, and I think being a Christian person, but also being an open person to understanding others, was really key in my personal development and maturity.
So going along with that, what types of topics or sessions did you attend at NCORE?
So as a student, we're required to attend a few sessions on our research topic. My group was Native Americans, and so I was basically able to attend a couple of those sessions, as well as a couple personal sessions, things that resonate with us. And I think being able to attend a few of those different sessions, with some being African-American, I am biracial, being able to attend some social justice sessions as well, understanding what I can do as a student to further my own personal development as well as the development of people around me was really important. And I think there are a myriad of topics that we discuss at NCORE, being that, I guess, sexual orientation, gender-specific issues, race, ethnicity, cultural, just a number of different things that we discuss.
Cool. Was there a favorite session that you attended?
There was actually a hip-hop in social justice session that I attended, and it was a lot about how the lyrics that we listen to subconsciously affect us and the things that we view and perceive in our culture. And I think that was key for me to just, like, step back and understand how the subtle things in life really do affect you and just being conscious. Like, Japana was recently talking to me about being conscious about the things that go on in your life, understanding just about what happens in your life and how that can affect you.
Okay. And then this question just for both of you, whoever wants to answer. Given the nation's current race and diversity issues, do you expect more people to show up to ISCORE or maybe attend NCORE this year?
Well, as I said, the conference, it's for Iowa State students and staff and faculty. I would hope it would increase. Did a presentation a few years ago, and it was titled More Than Just a Day. And so the ISCORE experience is to spark conversations that happen throughout the year and so forth. So I think it will increase. It steadily increases for a number of reasons, and that may be a contributing factor.
And then, Daquan, you come from the student perspective at Iowa State. Do you think that more people are willing to talk about these issues, or are they more hesitant?
I think we live in more of a more progressive society, and I feel like we're leaning towards being able to have these conversations, you know, as we move forward, especially at Iowa State, being that we're growing as a student base in international students as well as diversity. And so as we continue to increase enrollment, you know, we must continue to discuss these different topics as we grow.
Okay. And then, Japana, could you tell us a little bit more about the NCORE 2015 this year?
Okay. Each year we take a group of 20 students to the national conference. So this year the conference is going to be held in New York. I mean, not, excuse me, not New York, but in Washington, D.C. So each place we go, we try to make sure NCORE is actually held in a place that has some type of history or some type of character. And so I'm looking forward to taking a group of students to the national conference in Washington, D.C.
Okay, and so Daquan, how do you feel about that, that this year's at Washington, D.C., and I know you attended the Indianapolis one.
Yeah, I mean, Washington, D.C., you know, Barack Obama's there. That would be amazing to be able to see him and maybe hear him speak at something as important as NCORE. But I loved Indy. Indy was awesome. We actually got caught the tail end of the Eastern Conference Finals, and we were able to kind of see Indianapolis at its peak. You know, when the Pacers had just beat the Heat in I think Game 6, and it was actually really cool to see Indianapolis you know, at prime time.
Yeah, that'd be fun to actually see if Obama would make an appearance maybe at NCORE. That would be something I'd really want to see, especially at NCORE. It'd be amazing to see him speak there and speak on race and diversity issues since everyone's been waiting on him to do that. So, well, it sounds very interesting, and I hope that this year's ISCORE opens up a lot of minds and humbles people into opening about these needed discussions about race and diversity. And I just hope that this year's NCORE and ISCORE cohort visiting D.C. will have an impactful experience just as we did. So thank you, Japana Kellogg and Daquan Burnside, for having this discussion with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, it was awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And Jasmine, can you remind us of the date of ISCORE?
Oh, yes. So it is March 6th. It is from 8 a.m. till 5 p.m., correct, Japana?
Yes.
Yep. And then so it starts off, you do have to register for the breakfast and lunch. I know that. So just make sure you log on to iscore.iastate.edu, and you can find all your information there.
All right. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 Story City Ames, where we explore the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I would like to thank our guest today. Our first interview was from guest journalist Loris Olson, who previewed the Theologian in Residence program at the Ames United Church of Christ. She interviewed Dr. Cynthia Martin, who is one of the two theologians who will offer workshops on music in worship at the Ames United Church of Christ this coming weekend, February 28th. Then I shared a story of how homelessness can happen when least expected and really how expensive it is to be poor. My guest in the studio was Jody Heron, who is the student and family development specialist for Nevada Schools and who accompanied the interviewee on several of these meetings and attested to the difficulties that her family is experiencing. The numbers attached to homelessness, I think I gave 2.5 million homeless children, each have a face and tell a story that can't be ignored. Finally, our KHOI intern Jasmine Murgia covered the ISCORE program at ISU. She has brought in two guests today to discuss this upcoming event. Japana Kellogg, the director of the Student Services Support Program at Iowa State. He is also a chair for the NCORE ISCORE program. And Daquan Burnside, sophomore at Iowa State, who attended NCORE this past May and is going to present at this year's ISCORE event happening March 6th.
Local Talk is a radio production, training workshop, as well as a radio show. If you would like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. And of course, you're always welcome to drop into our studios in downtown Ames. If you enjoy the show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to the show and all our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.